Go on, everyone. I hope this episode finds you outside playing, out on the trail, out on the road, doing something outside. Or if you are inside, hopefully you're staring at a map and scheming out for some big dream days to come out and some peaks or passes to bag. Or maybe it's a rest day and you've been smashing yourself for the last little while. And today you just get to hang out and relax. And if it's nice weather, maybe you get to go hang a hammock between some trees and lay in the sun. Or maybe it's just absolutely nuking outside and you're really satisfied that you timed it just perfectly. So today is your rest day. Anyways, today is with Quinn Simmons. Quinn is one of the youngest riders in the World Tour. He's riding for Trek Segafredo. He is also probably the only person that has been able to stand on the Junior World Championships podium in both Skimo racing and road cycling. Before he got into road cycling, he was big into mountain biking and went to the World Championships and got on the podium for Skimo racing, which is pretty cool, but evidently he hates cross-country skiing. We talk about all kinds of crazy stuff in this. I forget what the question was, but somehow we got onto the topic that Quinn trains with a drone when he goes riding, whereas a lot of us have handlebar bags now to maybe put an extra jacket or some food in. He puts his drone and his camera with him, so he's always training with that, which I thought was super cool. And as far as what he actually does eat on the ride, he likes to stop for Subway mid-ride and have, I don't remember what it was, maybe a pizza sub or something ridiculous like that. There's all kinds of great content in here. Also, just when we recorded this podcast, the Olympic long list for the United States had just recently been published, and Quinn was left off that list, and he had been hoping to be selected for that, and so he talks about how he feels about that. Anyways, I hope you enjoy this episode with Quinn, and you can definitely follow him on Instagram, which is his name, or myself at jackflash66 or jackburkcycling.com. All right, enjoy the episode. Hey, Quinn, good morning, man. What time is it for you?
It's 9 a.m. How about you?
It's 5 for me, so I'm in Austria. Right. Where are you in Colorado?
I'm actually in Park City, Utah right now for a little training camp, but normally I'm in Durango, Colorado.
Okay. Why Park City, Utah instead of Durango?
Well, I'm here with my brother and two of my friends, and you know, they're from California and wanted some altitude training, and we just wanted somewhere different to ride. Yeah, it's been a long bit at home training on the same roads. So nice to mix it up a little bit and try and keep the motivation up.
Sure. Are you planning on coming back to Europe soon?
So I'll go home on July 1st, do another month of training there. And then theoretically, I come back beginning of August and start racing with Tour of Poland.
Okay. So beginning of August. Yep. Cool. And then are there any other kind of, I imagine Durango is actually a pretty sweet place to go for a training camp. Is there any other cool places you've been to? I mean, Mallorca was one. Where do you like to go for training camps?
Spending the winter in Mallorca, I think, is the best place I've ever been, especially to train in the winter. It's perfect weather and the training there. And, you know, I think that's going to be where I base myself most winters in the future now that I know it. You know, it works really well for training. But in the U.S., I like to start my season in November, do the first bit in Malibu, and then Tucson for December, and then head over to Europe. It's what I did this year, and I think a pattern I'll keep going, hopefully.
Sweet, yeah. The Tucson's nice because you can always go do the shootout, and then you have Mount Lemmon and everything there.
Yeah, no, it's perfect, really.
Yeah, cool. So before cycling happened, you were like massively into Skimo, right?
The skier, it was kind of at the same time as I was mountain bike racing. My first year 15-16 was when I was ski racing and went to Worlds at the same time, and then flew straight back and went to Southern California to start the mountain bike season. But yeah, it's always been something I've done. The racing wasn't a big focus except for that one year when I wanted to go to the Worlds. But other than that, it's just been, you know, skiing. Skiing is my favorite thing to do. I think I like it a lot more than I like riding a bike, but it's hard to have a career in it. So I have to wait and get my skiing in a few years.
Sure. And like always backcountry skiing?
I always skied at the resort growing up. This is, you know, what you did in the winter. But then a bit more backcountry. I just kind of got bored of where we were, and, you know, a way to stay fit in the winter.
So how old were you when you got into like touring and like proper skimo, like instead of taking the lifts up?
It's hard to say, really. I mean, my parents had always done it a bit, and, you know, I started going first when they'd make me go because, you know, I'd rather be at the resort being lazy. But, you know, that year when I was 15 and, you know, had the goal of Worlds and trying to do well there, that was the first year I really got into, you know, more doing it as a training method rather than just for fun.
Okay.
And taking it a bit more serious.
Cool. Well, I was just amazed when I heard that you're like, you went to Worlds for skimo, because I didn't even think they had it for juniors. Like, so I love following like Killian Jornet, and I love skimo myself and like backcountry touring. And like in Canada, I live in probably the biggest hotspot for it, like in Whistler and Squamish there. And I don't even think we have a national team for that. So how did, I didn't
There's
know.
There is a Canadian national team.
Oh, well, that's terrible on me. Yeah. I didn't know that. Like where are these skimo races? Like, is there, I know it's mostly like a European sport, but is there a ton of racing for it? Like skimo in Colorado, I would imagine. Is it
big anywhere? There's a pretty good series in Colorado, and you know, there's some races in Canada and everything. And, you know, for me, I was doing it at this time when mountain bike racing was the focus. So the ski racing in the winter was pretty limited. It was just, you know, I did what was needed to qualify for the Worlds and then raced Worlds. So I didn't really do too much of the North American stuff, but yeah, it's growing a bit. It's still really small though.
Okay. Have you spent much time in the backcountry as far as like, have you ever done like any avalanche training or done like hut trips, like gone and stayed at huts with some buddies?
Never a hut trip, but I did do the level one Abbey course.
Okay.
A few years ago. Yeah.
Is there any backcountry stories that come to mind? Any examples of reckless but fun behavior when you're young, you think you're invincible. Like, oh yeah, I'm sure it's fine. Then you look back and you're like, wow, we're pretty lucky we didn't die. Is there anything like that that comes to mind?
I don't know. I think, you know, I have a pretty high risk tolerance. You know, I like, that's what I like about it is the being scared and, you know, going doing cool things. And, you know, the mountaineering part of it, you know, I just started climbing a little bit and, you know, able to, haven't done much, but, you know, in the future, I'd like to do some of the more scary, more mountaineering type lines, but for now it's, you know, I got to keep it pretty mellow.
Sure. What kind of mountaineering goals are you thinking about for the future? Like high altitude stuff, or?
I haven't thought that far ahead, but
okay. You know,
it's something, you know, I'd like to ski the North Face Mount Blanc one day. I know that for sure. But
nice. That's a great one. Yeah. Mount Blanc, Chamonix. That's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
Any other cool places you'd want to go to?
Oh, I mean, like I said, I really haven't thought that far ahead. I know I'd like to climb the Matterhorn someday in the winter.
Okay. Well, yeah.
But and so cool stuff like that, but that's all. That's all 10 years from now.
Sure. Yeah. Well, it's beautiful there in Switzerland. It's an awesome area. Cool. So have you made any kind of like, so now stepping up to the world tour and like as a junior, you're always super focused and you have to like you're making every sacrifice you can, but you're always working on a budget in that way. And now stepping up to the big leagues, you have access to some incredible coaches and stuff, and you're making a proper living wage now. It's like, have there been any investments you've made in yourself in your training in order to kind of take advantage of the opportunities you have now? Have there been any kind of ways you've invested in yourself? Like obviously going to Mallorca would be one, but
yeah, I think that was the biggest one, which is, you know, right when the season started, get over there. And, you know, once you're settled in Europe and used to it, it's so much easier to race. So spend the winter in Mallorca, that made, you know, the training camps really easy to get to, because one of our training camps was in Mallorca, and then the early racing. So by doing that, you cut back on flying back and forth, which is pretty big performance benefit. And then I was in Belgium for 3 weeks before the classics, just doing the recon and getting really settled in there, even though the weather was super bad and the training's not that great. But to have the knowledge of the courses and, you know, be used to the weather, I think that was the biggest investment I started to make in the season. And, you know, just as it got set up, got sent home.
Yeah, sure. Any like things as far as like gear, tools, anything, like whether it's the air boots or the massage guns or any of that kind of stuff? Have you played around with that stuff at all?
I do have a pair of the boots and a massage gun, but you know, a lot of the stuff at this level, the team takes care of for you. So obviously when you're at training camps and races, you get a massage every day. And, you know, we have a nutritionist and the full performance staff and, you know, really everything you need, you just ask for it and they'll take care of it.
Cool. Have you learned anything from working with any of those new professionals, like working with the nutritionist and stuff like that?
Yeah. For me, luckily they've been pretty loose just because I'm so young. So I'm not, you know, yet on like a super strict nutrition plan or anything, but just, you know, the general guidelines of, you know, what to eat for what workout and for what type of race and when to fuel. And, we have a whole website with charts and everything to go through, but no, it's just all of it's really common sense if you think about it. You know, if it's you have a big training the next day, you eat a carb dinner. If you had a rest day, you just eat a salad. You know, little things that as a junior you don't really do, and you know, it's just taking care of all the small details because the big part of it's you just ride your bike a lot, and that hasn't changed from last year.
Sure.
Now just fine-tuning the small details.
Okay. And then which do you like better, the massage gun or the boots? Which is more
The boots are easier. You don't have to do anything, so.
Cool. And so where are you based in Europe? Where did you decide to settle yourself there?
Well, the plan was to spend the classics in Belgium, then come here home. And originally, very early on in the schedule, was come back to tour California and then some gravel stuff here and then nationals and then go back to Europe for the second part of the season. But when we lost California, the schedule kind of got put into a question mark. Wasn't really sure what my summer was going to be. I know I was going to be home June, May, end of May, June from Kansas and nationals here and then head back to Europe. And now I have no idea where I'll be staying because it's too early to make a plan. I don't really want to rent a house over there and then find out we don't actually race this year. So right now it's just kind of waiting.
Where would you, if you were going back over, do you have an idea? Like places you'd want to live?
I know long-term I want to be in Mallorca, eventually set up permanently there for the racing.
Is there any other World Tour riders that live there full-time?
Stibar lives there.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I know like guys that have retired there, but I didn't think anyone lived there permanently. Okay. And so with all the travel and living out of your suitcase all the time, is there any unique things that you travel with? Any sort of weird things? Like, you know, like guys sometimes have their coffee setups, their AeroPress and stuff. I once had a teammate that would bring his own like little, he had this weird little like shoe dryer, like a really portable thing because he didn't like having his shoes wet the next day. Is there anything that you ever travel with that's kind of odd?
When I travel within the U.S., I bring an espresso machine with me, but that doesn't really work when you fly to Europe. So,
how do you travel with an espresso machine, like on the plane
or in your? Oh no, only when I drive.
Oh, okay. What kind of espresso?
I've driven that thing all around the country, pretty much.
What kind
Except
of machine?
Water room. It's a Breville.
Okay.
A weird thing. I don't know. I train with a drone. That's kind of weird.
You train with a drone?
Yeah, I bought a Mavic Mini that I can fit in my bar bag. And I bring that everywhere now.
So how does this work? It sounds cool, but how do you do this? What do you do with the drone?
It's just for taking pictures and video. Like when because you ride to all these cool places. And, you know, sometimes it's fun to stop and fly a drone around, take a little cool video for the Instagram.
Your sponsors must love you for this.
I don't know. No one said anything, but I think it's pretty cool. So
that's wild. Is it hard to fly it? I've never used a drone.
No, it's pretty easy. And it's really small. It just fits in the bar bag that I have. So,
and it's just
a drone and a camera almost on every training now.
does it ever like follow you on the bike or something like that? Or is this literally like when everyone stops at the top of the climb and we're whipping out our phones and just like wiping the sweat off the lens, you're whipping out the drone and just taking like some crazy shots?
Yeah, pretty much.
This is hilarious. I've never heard this before.
I think it's a pretty American thing to do, I think. I don't know. I don't know what the Euro guys are going to think of it. I haven't brought it to Europe yet.
I think that sounds like more like an Asian thing, like you, like the tourists that you see at a lot of the
selfie stick.
Well, yeah, that too. What else goes in this handlebar bag? You've got a drone in there. You put anything?
You got a drone and a camera.
Like a camera, other than your camera. Phone.
Yeah,
a proper camera.
Yeah.
What kind of camera do you have?
A Sony RX100.
Okay. So a proper camera. This is cool. All right.
Yeah.
What do you, all right, so just because you give me such a crazy answer there, what do you eat when you're training, or what do you take for ride food?
If it's like a hard, structured, like real focused training, I'll just use the team nutrition and the drink mix and our bars and everything that I would use in the race. But for recovery or a long endurance day, I mean, I'll eat anything, you know, make a little sandwich to bring, or I'm a big fan of the coffee stop pastry.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit too big of a fan, but yeah, no, I think that's my favorite part of the ride is stopping somewhere and just buying food. You know, if you do a 6-hour ride, stop 4 hours in, get Subway, anything like that.
Subway.
I'm into it. Yeah.
What kind of sandwich are you getting at Subway? Like a meatball sub, like a full pizza sub. This is hilarious.
Well, the best training I ever did was I had the 7-hour ride. It was the only time I'd felt good for that long. And I stopped 4 hours in, I got a foot-long BLT. And there's like 30 minutes after where I thought I was going to throw up. And then after that, I was flying.
This is incredible. You're perfect for Dirty Kansas and like the whole gravel community. That's so funny. Okay, any other hobbies that you do? So you love skiing. I totally agree with that. What about like cross-country skiing? Have you ever got into that?
I went once and I hated it.
Really? You hated it. Okay.
So if I'm going to suffer on the bike, I want my skiing to be fun.
Okay. Sure. Like, fair enough.
It was just too, like, I like skiing not for the uphill, for the enjoyment of going downhill. Okay. Cross country felt too much like riding a road bike.
Okay. So you love skiing. You obviously ride a road bike. Any other sort of fun hobbies? Doesn't even have sports.
I don't really do much outside sports, really. I started climbing a little bit in the winter. I'm not very good at all, but it's kind of fun.
Okay.
So it's a good rest day activity, too, because you don't really do anything. Just go hang out.
Nice. Where do you typically go climbing?
When we were in Lemon, in Tucson, it was really good. Lemon's like has a ton of options.
Okay. So, yeah. Like proper like ropes and everything, or bouldering?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Cool. That's awesome. What about a rest day is like bouldering or proper rock climbing for you, eh? You play like guitar, read books, anything like that? Anything?
None of that, no.
No.
Nope.
Okay. How about best thing you've ever bought that's under $500? Could be like your handlebar bag, could be anything like that. What is the best investment you've ever made under $500?
Best investment or like enjoyment wise?
Well, if you got both, give me both.
Well, the drone is 500. I might've been like 520. So that's breaking the rules a little bit, but before taxes, it was 499. So I use that.
Okay.
Best investment. That's a hard one. Probably have to be something that helped with training. I don't know.
Or how about what's the time that like you, or how about this? When so now that you're stepping up to the world tour, like you said in one interview when people were asking you if it sounded crazy for you to go from the juniors, skip the under 23s, go to the world tour. And you explained that it was very much so your plan the whole time, that, you know, this is structured. Like we built out the training over a year in advance to get ready for this. what have you done now? Because now you're going from junior racing up to wanting to race the classics in the World Tour. What have you had to focus on the most with your training, or what have you had to train the most and focus on the most in order to basically fast track your development that way?
Well, I'd have to back it up to, I guess, November would have been 2018 before the season last year. And I, switched coaches, and, the goal from then on, I said, I want to be racing World Tour in 2020. And, we started building in a way that, it wasn't really typical junior training. It was big volume, not a ton of intensity, just really building the engine. Because, in the World Tour, it's cool if you have a good 5-minute, good 20-minute power, whatever. But none of that matters if you can't do it after 5 hours. So just started to really build, my capacity and strength as a rider. And, did that all last winter. And, even throughout the season, just used the racing for the intensity and just, kept trying whenever we could to keep the volume up. And, just really in the World Tour, it's just, you just have to ride your bike a lot and have that volume in the legs because the races are so long, especially coming from a junior. And then, I was able to do that successfully all last year. And then starting again November this year, this training stayed pretty similar. Just, again, another step up in volume. And just really trying to, play catch up on the capacity that all those guys have.
So what is like a big week for volume? Like, what are some specifics? What does big mean?
The last 7 days I did 36 hours.
Okay. And what's like the biggest that you've ever gone? Have you ever pushed it too far?
I push it too far every time I train, pretty much. I'm always in a constant cycle of probably being more tired than I should be, but nothing real bad has happened yet. So I'm going to keep pushing.
Is there any times that you can think of as far as like we either went to Mallorca or you went somewhere and be like, all right, let's just go annihilate each other every day?
Is there any? Well, that's the thing. I don't train that hard. Like intensity wise, I don't push it that much. It's just, a lot of strength work, a lot of tempo, a lot of endurance. And, when I first went to Mallorca, all the new roads and everything, I did 2-3 really big weeks in a row and then went to the training camp, and training camp was big. And I actually did have a little knee injury coming out of training camp, which probably was because I had done my 4 biggest weeks ever and then stacked them all in a row.
Okay. How big are those weeks? Like what's 4 massive weeks? For the people that are just like super nerdy and want to know like what it actually takes to ride at that level. What are some
probably like 28 to 32 hours, which one by itself isn't a lot, but once you try and do 2 or 3 of them, they start to add up.
Sure. Okay. And then have you had to do anything with your training as far as like doing your efforts after 5 hours of training and stuff like that to get used to exactly what you're explaining that's different from the junior racing?
Yeah, that's what I do now is if I do any intensity, I won't do it until after 5,000 kilojoules.
Okay. Jeez, that's a long way into the ride.
Last year before Worlds when I was really training, I wouldn't let myself do my intervals until 4,000, and I found that worked really well. So push it back a little bit more this year.
How big are you, Quinn? Like how tall and how heavy are you?
I'm 6'1" and 168 pounds right now.
Okay, so that's like a pretty typical classics rider.
I'm actually one of the smaller guys on the team. I was surprised.
168 pounds and 6'1"?
Yeah, on the classics team, I'm one of the smaller, yeah.
Okay. Huh. Crazy. And then so, like, working within your team, like, you got so many amazing guys to just be around and so many cool mentors and stuff. Have there been any ones that you've really looked up to or any one specific teammate that's helped you out a lot the most or that you've been able to just kind of watch and mirror as much as possible?
I've actually been really happy specifically with our classics. I mean, I like the whole organization completely, but specifically with our classics team, we have a really good group of, guys that work really well together when we're racing, but off the bike, it's still really fun to be in. I was a little worried that making the step up, you'd lose that where you're just friends with all your teammates and having fun, but you know, our group of 10 classics guys does a really good job of, you know, having that good environment. And, you know, we got really good sports directors that complement that. And, you know, I think everyone has a job on the team and does it really well. And I mean, you saw on opening weekend with Jasper winning, you know, we were set up for a really good classic season. So it was quite a loss that, you know, we didn't get to show that. But in terms of looking up to one specific rider, I mean, we don't have that one big champion on the team in the classics anyways.
You know, you have the world champion.
Yeah, but Mads is one of those guys who he'll be pulling on the front if he needs to. He'll be getting the bottles. You know, it's not built around one guy. We got Mads who can win, Jasper who can win. Alex could win on his day if he gets the shot. You know, Ryan's really strong. We have all these guys, and I think the lack of having that one dude who's won a ton of races is why we have such a good group, because, you know, it's not like a team where, like Bora, where you're built completely around Sagan or completely around one rider. We're just all there to, you know, really put on a show and try and win races.
Okay. And so out of everyone that you've seen in the World Tour, so it's mostly going to be your teammates, but you've obviously interacted with some of the other guys and some of the other teams as well. On a scale of 1 to 10, who is the most freak talent that you've seen so far? Just unbelievable talent.
I mean, I think anyone who's in the World Tour is a pretty big talent, but it's hard to say because, you know, in the races I've done, in the classics anyways, you know, it's 90% knowing the race and knowing how to do the race. It's not necessarily who has the biggest engine, because if it was about who has the biggest engine, I wouldn't be not finishing them. Sure. No, it's that. But I think as far as the time I was blown most away is probably the first time I watched Quintana go up a climb.
Really? What was that like?
Well, I didn't see it for very long, but in the pros, it's the divide between the classics guys and the climbers is just so big, and everyone has to specialize so much in what they do that he's just so small, and the way they can go up a hill, it's just like, I'm not built like that.
Which race is this?
I was at Tour de Provence in France, early in the year.
When he went up Ventoux.
Yeah, I think he set the record up Ventoux or something.
Yeah, that's
crazy. I think he did it in 30 minutes. I did it in like an hour.
Crazy. That's amazing. Okay, so how about on the other end of the spectrum then? So if that's who stands out as someone who's just a freak talent, is there anyone that you've just been like, so like everybody works super hard. You work super hard to get to where you are, and you've got to be thinking every day about trying to find every little bit. Is there anyone that stands out that blew your mind as far as how hard they work? Like someone that has really earned every, like maybe they don't have that much talent or they don't have that many opportunities, but somehow they've kind of just grinded their way to the top there, or someone just that just outworks everybody else at the top there. Is there anyone that stands out that way?
I haven't seen it personally, but from what I see on the outside and just through Strava, I think Bernal is the one who trains the hardest in the peloton.
Really?
Yeah. If you look at his Strava, it's pretty insane what he's doing. And then you have to factor in he's doing it at 3,000 meters, so there's that load too.
Crazy. Okay, cool. How about switching gears? The reason I ask you this is because I asked Sepp about it, and he talked a little bit about these. But have you guys played around with ketones at all for any of the racing or training?
The team uses them. I personally don't. I don't think they work. I think it's counterproductive, in that there's a bunch of hype around it, and everyone doesn't really know why they're doing it.
Okay,
they're just doing it because other people are doing it, but the research I did talking to some people, I don't use them personally, no.
Okay. Well, what's the craziest thing that you've ever tried to try to get better? I was talking to one of my buddies back home, like one of my mountain biker buddies, and I was like, man, what are some of the dumbest things you've ever done? And he said like he put rocks in a backpack one time and went riding with that because he figured, oh yeah, if I just train with a backpack full of rocks all the time, then when I take it off, I'll be faster. Is there any kind of goofy stuff like that that you've ever tried?
I mean, I do agree with the training with a heavier. I try and keep my bike pretty heavy when I train, but I don't think that's that weird.
How do you do that? How do you keep your bike heavy?
I just ride with, you know, a big saddlebag and the bar bag and all that extra stuff, heavy wheels. Just, and I think there's a mental switch when you get on the race bike and you feel faster. I think that's important to have.
Sure. And you,
as far as,
keep going.
What?
No, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just saying, as far as something super weird, I mean, some of the guys on the team think my 5,000 kilojoules and then start doing intervals is weird, but I think it makes sense.
Yeah, that's definitely a pretty extreme way of doing it. But so you have a really sick bike, like the Trek Madonna. I think is a really cool bike because it's unbelievably aero in the sense where it's like, it's probably more aero than a lot of other brands' time trial bikes. But then you can also put these monstrous, it's got so much tire clearance with the discs, and you were putting some pretty monstrous tires in there, weren't you?
Oh yeah, I guess that might be my weird. I put 35 gravel tires on the Madonna,
and they didn't. And they didn't rub.
There was a little bit of rubbing in the back.
That is incredible. 35.
It only rubbed if I sprinted.
Okay.
And like really flexed it. So, and I was going on a bike biking trip, so there's not really any sprinting. So
wow.
In a week, I just wore through the first layer of paint, so it didn't really rub.
Your mechanics just gonna hate you at the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay. I'd probably go 32.
Okay, 32 would easily fit, but that's still monstrous for an aero road bike.
Yeah, in the front, the 35 is totally fine in the front.
Okay, would you like just keep those on for training, just to make the bike slower normally?
I thought about it. I took them off because I wanted to do a group ride, but I had thought about putting them back on. But I do a lot of my training on the gravel bike just to be riding on a slower bike.
Okay.
And I do some like local group rides on the gravel bike, and then, you know, I can be, you know, no matter how strong someone else is, I can be really suffering.
Sure. And then so, like, doing as well as you have for how young you are, what do you attribute that to? Is it talent? Did you just start earlier and you've just been doing this racing and everything for longer? Is it talent? Is it what is
it? I started later than everyone, I think. I mean, I only had 2 years of road racing.
Okay.
My first and second year junior, so.
Or I guess like mountain biking and everything before that. Is what do you attribute to the fact that you've had so much success so young? What do you think it is?
I think it's just because I'm not afraid to go work for it. A lot of juniors are told, oh, you'll burn out, or oh, you can't take it this serious yet. And I'm like, well, that's kind of stupid. I want to win worlds, so I'm going to go train absolutely as hard as I can and, you know, work towards that goal. And,
okay. Is there any...
I'm not a...
Is there any, like, what do you use for motivation for that? Is there, like, quotes or movies or anything like that that comes to mind? Or someone that you saw that motivated you to want to be like that?
I just really hate losing is what it comes down to. You know, I think, yeah, I had a good start to the year this year. You know, I was motivated just because, you know, as a first year junior, I didn't really know what I was doing on the road, but I still won some stuff. And then came into the second year thinking, okay, yeah, this is my year to do well. And, you know, I won Hemwebelhem, and then at Roubaix, things didn't go as planned, and that made me pretty mad. You know, that anger fueled the rest of the season. You know, losing that one race actually, you know, let me win 20 more races throughout the year. And now, you know, it was part of the problem actually beginning of the year why I didn't have any good results to start in the pros is just because I think I was almost too happy. I was satisfied with having just won worlds and just signed this contract with a big team, and, you know, I was really enjoying it. And, you know, now to be here and not racing, and then with being left off the Olympic team, you know, I found that motivation back and I'm ready to move on from, you know, being stoked on the worlds and stoked on the contract to now get ready to go back to work.
Okay. And what was it like to be left off the Olympic team? Because that just got announced, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a big surprise, and something I'll tell everyone I can that I disagree with. I'm not going to hide the fact that I think I should be on that team, and I'm going to do the work to prove that I belong on there.
Sure. Okay. And then did you inquire as to like why, and did you get an answer as to why you were left off that team?
I did inquire, but no good answer has been provided. No.
No, that's a shame.
I think. It is. I do understand it's hard to, take someone with less experience than the other guys, but I also think if they're going to talk about developing and working towards the future, this is a good opportunity, I'm not under any illusion that I'll go to Tokyo and do well. And, I'm not physically in my prime yet. I'm not ready for that, but to go and to get the experience and, to be there to support a rider like Seb, which is a job I think I can do really well, and then come back to Paris with the experience and, go for a medal, something that, an American hasn't been able to do in a long time. I think that's super valuable. And, I just need to prove that I'm the right dude for that job.
Sure. Okay. Well, good for you for saying that, giving an opinion on it. It's much better than hearing just much more wishy-washy safe answers. So,
Yeah.
Okay. Well, no, that's good that you're so solid on that idea. So how about, what's any sort of like standout differences you see between the Euro and North American culture? Like there's always so many funny ones, like you make fun of Euro English and stuff like that. Is there any sort of goofy things that you see, like differences in the culture or things that they make fun of you for?
It's I think everything's really pretty different.
What are the ones
I'm pretty
in the most?
The one I like the least is the fact that we eat dinner at 8 o'clock at night with the team. I hate that. I can't do the Euro late dinner thing.
Sure.
But I don't know. I think if I took the serious answer, it'd be to look at the racing and, the way they treat it versus the way Americans treat it. Over there, it's a real sport that you push for. And then over here, it's, everyone wants a finisher medal. And I think that's a lot of the reason why Americans haven't done well.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. So last question then. What's your favorite Euro English saying? Like just almost like a funny thing. We make a picture, we make a party, or any these sort of things.
I like that make is in everything, like no matter what it is. It's like, oh, you want to make the training or you make the ride. I think the funniest one was when I have a Dutch coach now, and I opened the Training Peaks one morning and it says, the description was making hours easy. I thought that was pretty funny.
Okay. Cool, man. Well, it's great to talk to you. And so you're heading back over in August. Where are you flying into, or where will you be at first?
Again, I have no idea. I think there's a chance we do a team camp in July and I might be there, but again, first race will be Tour of Poland. So I likely fly in just for that, straight into Poland. Hopefully it depends on what's going on with the quarantine or whatever you have to do to get in.
Okay. All right. Well, man, for myself as well, I hope the racing ends up actually going forward, but at least I have somewhat of a plan on. Do you think races are going to happen, or do you think these races are going to get canceled? Like Tour de France, do you think that's going to happen this year?
I think the Tour will. The rest, I'm not sure about, but the Tour is so big and, the French economy needs it. And, it's just, it's the biggest sporting event in the world.
But what about like
things that happen to the Tour?
You don't think there'll be a problem with like riders from different countries trying to get in or being to get across borders? You think they'll get around that?
I mean, there's ways you can do it. You see with other sports, it's a Tour. If they have to get everyone in France 2 weeks early and corner or whatever they make them do, I think, the teams will do whatever it takes to race the Tour. And, I think France will do whatever it takes to have the Tour. So if there's no racing at all, I think, or there's no other racing, maybe wouldn't be that surprised, but I think for sure the Tour will happen.
Okay. Well, cool, man. Thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Cheers, buddy.
Cool. Thanks.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening into Quinn there. I really wanted to do this episode with him because it's been fun following him on social media and seeing the monster rides he loves to log constantly. And I thought it was really cool, the bike setup he has, where he has his full race bike and he's put these monstrous tires on it and able to go do these bike packing trips. But I also really wanted to hear more about the Ski-Mo background, because like Matt said, I'm pretty involved. I don't race Ski-Mo, obviously, because I didn't even know we had a national team for it. But I just thought it was super cool that he was already racing for that. I love following the senior ranks of that, the guys like Killian Jornet and the pros that are doing it. But I didn't know there was such thing as junior worlds for Ski-Mo racing. So I always thought that was super cool that Quinn was on the podium for that. So I really enjoyed this conversation with him, and I'd recommend following him as well. He puts up a lot of cool stuff on social media, and the fact that he goes training with a drone, I think, is just absolutely hilarious. Whenever I saw any of the drone footage on his feeds, I figured that was just some of his sponsors coming out and filming that, but I think that's so funny that it just fits in his handlebar bag. So I hope you enjoyed the episode. I hope you enjoyed some of those stories, learning a little bit more about Quinn. You can follow him on social media, and if you want to follow me, it's JackFlash66 on Instagram or JackBurkeCycling.com. All right. Cheers, everybody.